You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that having this commitment, this long-term commitment, is really, really important. And I think especially for leaders, I think that there needs to be an outward-facing commitment and an inward-facing commitment. And I think that if we see white women go back to just their regular feeds after a week or so, then there's an assumption for other white women that it's okay to do that. When you're in a leadership space, and when I talk about leadership, I mean if you're the head of a household, if you are leading in a community, in an organization, in the workplace, in a school environment, as a soccer coach, like, however you lead, we're all leaders. When people see you lead in that way, that you give them permission to do the same thing.
Since our status quo is ever-changing, Scott and I wanted to directly address what's going on in our world more often.
Yes, status quo is a thing of the past.
So true. We started in April with our COVID Warrior series.
We had no idea how well that would do. We actually high-fived each other when we saw how many downloads we got that first week.
And while you may not see Scott and I out there protesting, because honestly, we have a lot of respect for this virus.
Yeah.
We do want to make sure that we lend our voices to yours. We are so inspired by all of you.
And as always, we want to bring you all kinds of different experiences from different points of view.
A few weeks ago, someone brilliant said, "Stop looking for the new normal. That ship has sailed. All we have is what's happening now." So Scott and I named this new Thursday edition of The Only One in the Room the Now Normal.
So some Thursdays you might hear from a COVID warrior. Some Thursdays, it might be all about race relations, and other Thursdays, who knows? We're going to keep it fluid for a while, but you can expect a new episode from us every week, as long as everything continues to change.
And don't forget to tune in every Tuesday when we bring you a brand new, amazing, only one in the room story from one of our absolutely incredible guests. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Sarah Dean, what podcasts are you listening to now?
Ooh, good question. So I've been listening to Check Your Privilege and Hello 7.
What's Hello 7?
Hello 7 is a podcast that a longtime mentor of mine and my business coach for the last couple of years, Rachel Rogers, it was previously called Million Dollar Badass. Now it's called Hello 7, as in like Hello 7 Figure Business.
Got and, it. Yeah.
So she's been a mentor for mine for a number of years now. And that's her podcast. In the last couple of months discovered First Name Basis. So Jasmine Bradshaw, she has a podcast which started out as a podcast for parents to talk about race with their children, but now it's really evolved into talking about just everything that's happened. Like, she started the podcast before, she's in her second season, so these conversations for her started before this whole revolution, and now she's talking about like all the things,
right?
Like current day and past, and it's just phenomenal. Those are like my three for learning and doing better. And then I'm always listening to, like, you know, Andy Cohen.
Yes, yes.
And for crying out loud and like things that can, you know, allow me to just laugh and escape.
Yes.
And Brene Brown's new show, Unlocking Us. So
yes.
Those are my top ones for now, I think.
Those
and of course,
great.
Your, I mean,
of
the
course.
Only one in the room.
Yes.
Goes without saying.
And you do. And I so appreciate you just being Well, I'm going to talk about that because you're amazing.
Thank you.
But I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the only one in the room special, the Now Normal Edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, I'm joined by my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So Sarah Dean is the creator and host of the Shameless Mom Academy podcast, a top-rated podcast with over 2 million downloads. Her biggest passion is helping women own their space. Today, Sarah motivates and inspires women to stop shrinking and start growing in every aspect of their lives. She is on a mission to inspire women and moms in particular to live bigger, bolder, braver, hashtag every damn day. In addition to all this, Sarah is a friend of mine, a generous resource for me as a fellow podcaster. She gave me the honor of being her opening keynote speaker at Shameless MomCon 2020, and she has been a huge supporter of The Only One in the Room. So I want to thank you and welcome you, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and honored to be asked back.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Sarah, tell me, how do you identify?
I identify as a white woman, mom, business owner, leader, CEO. Let's see, how else? Recovering perfectionist, sometimes mostly.
Yeah.
Type A control freak. Anxious personality type.
Yeah.
I'm an ENFJ on Myers-Briggs. I also identify as a wife, a daughter. So those are a handful of the ways.
Nice. In my article, which was titled White Women, I'm Glad You're Showing Up, But I'm Not Sure I Trust You Just Yet.
Right.
There's a line in it where I basically ask white women to leave black women alone and educate themselves about racism in this country. So it might sound strange or feel strange that I've asked you to come on the show and talk to me about racism. But I think it's an important conversation to have with you because your posts about racism have been really impactful and prolific. And this goes beyond the era of the horrific murders that have taken place in this country in 2020. This goes back beyond that. But I wanted to ask you, why the urgency to talk about race? Why is that important to you?
You know, it's so interesting that I've had an urgency to talk about it and be open around my beliefs and who I stand up for and stand with for a number of years now. And I was just the other day thinking about why? Mm-hmm. Why is this something that was, you know, that's been important to me? So when you ask me how I identify, I've been learning more about my personality type through, you know, all sorts of different little testing and everything and the Enneagram and all this stuff, I've learned that my personality type has a strong need for social justice. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to, so I think some of it comes from that it's just like justice has always been a big thing for me. I also think some of it has to do with, I was raised by a single mom and I went to Catholic schools my whole life. And what's interesting about that is I really shied away from Catholicism and for so much of my life after going to Catholic schools, because there's so many things that the church does that are just horrendous and awful and I don't agree with. But that said, 16 years of Catholic education did teach me a lot about showing up for other people, learning other people's stories and histories and culture and appreciating differences and seeking out differences and getting curious around differences. And it's funny that there's so many parts of that parts of Catholicism that I wanted to reject.
Mm-hmm.
But as I look back on it, I really have started to think that foundation around my education taught me from an early age to look deeper and open my eyes in different ways. And I think that my mom also is someone who has modeled that in different ways. And, you know, obviously as a single parent, she was hugely influential in how I opened my eyes to the world. And so
yes.
I think that's kind of where it all began, probably.
And then can you tell me what kind of responses you're getting from your white community members about your posts, about this urgency for that you have to talk about race?
So it's been really interesting. I've got a huge range of responses. I would say the large majority are in, you know, gratitude, in solidarity and in gratitude. So people who agree and want to learn more, and a number of women who are very willing to listen, excited to listen, eager to learn, and they're grateful for any resources that I share or my opinions, and they take those as learning opportunities and opportunities to do better.
Yeah.
And then with that, there's also, you know, people who are highly offended.
How does that express when someone's highly offended?
Yeah, there's been a couple different ways. There's kind of two different buckets. So there's the bucket of, I would say, like the all lives matter people, mm-hmm. who are like, how dare you? How dare? And one post in particular where I said, like, I am racist and so are you, was how I started the post, which mm-hmm. is, you know, somewhat polarizing.
Yes.
So there was people in that who responded to that who were like, how dare you?
Right.
How dare you call me racist? How dare we put labels on people? And there was like some, you definitely some very strong reactions to that. So mm-hmm. there's that group there. And then there's another group of women who think that my stance and my voice is performative and that I'm only doing it to look a certain way and uphold a certain image. And so, and that is actually probably more challenging for me than the people who are so highly offended. 'Cause
yeah.
like, I don't feel like I need to, if you want to go believe that you're not racist and you're not part of the problem, like go have a, you know, go live your life. So mm-hmm. at some point, I hope you see better and do better. But like being accused of being performative around something that I take very, very seriously, that definitely, that's harder. And so I would say that's kind of the feedback that I've gotten that hasn't been in support or in solidarity would be kind of in those two camps. Yeah.
Well, and actually, I was going to say that I feel like a lot of corporations are using Black Lives Matter kind of prophylactically to protect their reputations and not really giving a shit about the movement. They just want to check the box. Right. And I was going to ask you if you get a sense that you're, I don't want to say just your community. I mean, I certainly don't want you to speak for all white women, but mm-hmm. because you're kind of an insider where I'm not, do you get the sense that that's happening in your community or in other communities that you're a member of, where they just want to be politically correct to check that box?
Yeah. So it's been super interesting because I'm a pretty deep observer. I'm a sociology major, so like I love just spying on human behavior, and social media is a great place to do that. And so as I, over the last month or so since this, you know, since Labor Day, when really this huge movement began on the scale that it's on now, I have spent a lot of time going back through people's social media feeds, especially on Instagram, to kind of see like, did they put up the black square and what have they done since then and what are they doing now?
Right.
And it's so interesting to see. For me, it's pretty clear when it's performative, and it's pretty clear when the motivation is to have a stance but not really be committed to more work. And it's also really clear when the commitment is very surface level, and very superficial. So I'm going to say this one or two sentences. That's that. I don't want to have to dig deeper. I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to I don't want to dig myself in a hole. And I can also tell in the way that people say things and post things, like whether they've actually done any work up to this point. And I think that's been a really interesting thing to see as well. And I've seen in the, you know, in the kind of the life coachy space that I'm in, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of white women who have gotten a lot of backlash and done things pretty poorly. And as they've tried to kind of work their way back from that, it's been interesting to see that their initial responses to things were just full of white fragility. And it took them a while to understand that about themselves and to see that in themselves and to be open to that. And so you can see like who was already doing the work, because they were immediately able to course correct when they said something wrong or if they didn't say something soon enough. And then those who had done no work, like the course correction has just been a disaster to watch.
Right.
And not to say that people aren't trying. I mean, I want people, white women especially, and white liberal women especially, to keep showing up, even if you mess it up over and over again. But mm-hmm. it has been pretty clear, like, who's already been in the work and who is just getting started.
Yeah. Well, and that's really interesting. And we're going to go through that post because I think it's just so profound. But before we do that, I just wanted to mention that I've had a few white women call or message me saying that they're ashamed to be white right now. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I wanted to see if you think it's hard to be a white liberal woman or man right now, or person, I should say, because non-binary.
This is such an interesting question. I was actually just this morning thinking, because my short answer is yes, it's hard. And I think that the discomfort is necessary. So like, I'm not going to say yes, it's hard and oh, poor me.
Right.
It's yes, it's hard. And it should be. And like, this is what we need to be doing right now. So I'm not begrudging that it's hard. The other piece of this is that there's so many times that I have said things to my husband, me as a feminist, and being like, well, middle-aged white men, blah, blah, blah. And my husband gets a little like, well, not all of us kind of a thing, you know?
Yes.
And right now there's times where I'm like, oh, but especially with, because there is a lot of conversation about the liberal white female response.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is spot on. Like, there's a lot of danger in how white women lead these conversations, and liberal white women especially, because we totally think we're off the hook, by the way.
Right.
And so I this morning was thinking like, oh, we're showing up just like my middle-aged white men, you know, who are, there's middle-aged white men across the board who are like invested in doing the right thing and keeping women's lives safe and being equitable in the workplace and all these things. And I constantly lump them like, well, that middle-aged white man can't tell me what to do.
Right.
And now I feel like I'm like, oh, I kind of know how my husband feels now when I say these things.
Cause
now I'm in a category of people who are being lumped into this, like, you know, liberal white women's response on BLM.
Right.
And so so it is hard, but I don't think something being hard is a reason to not step all the way up and figure it out.
I think that's a really good comparison. I think that's really applicable to this.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
So Scott and I were talking yesterday, and he was talking about where his own biases have, where he's found his own bias over the years, especially like with coming into my family. You know, I'm not biracial. Both my parents are black. My family's black on both sides. So it's a black family. Scotty was raised as an only child. He has an older sister that lived in another state. His family was very small and white. And so to the culture shock, you know, kind of being part of my family allowed him, I think, is the word he would use to look at his own biases. Is that what you would say, Ann?
Sure, yeah. I realized at a Sunday dinner that the history that I was learning at the dinner table was not the one I was exposed to growing up. And I had to look inside and see, you know, not get defensive and see where I could begin to be a part of that conversation as opposed to battle it.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the places where I saw my own bias. My bias meaning my belief system was challenged by another culture's belief system. And how do I blend those two things?
Yeah. And so I was just wondering, because you did write this beautiful post, which we're going to look at next, where have you become aware of your own biases? And did that prompt you to write this post, or was it separate?
I would say I've become aware of more biases since writing the post.
Yeah.
So I think that I had this thought that because I have been, quote, doing the work, that there were some things I was exempt from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm already here doing this. Like, right. So I'm good, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also felt like that because people have known me to be, you know, diverse and inclusive in my community and in bringing guests on my show and all these things, I felt like, well, people know my heart and people know my intentions. And so I felt like that there's some things that I've said and done in the last year that because of my, where I've set boundaries in ways or said things because I thought, well, this person knows who I am. And so it's okay for me to be in this conversation in a certain way. Mm. And ended up totally hurting a few people's feelings. Yeah. And it took me a minute to see that, to learn more deeply. It's funny, like I learn about intentions versus impact. And when I learned about that, you know, a couple of years ago, I was like, oh, I got it. And now when I look back, I'm like, oh, but it's one thing to get it and then another thing to apply it.
Right.
And so I think that's where some of my biases have come up around, like, just because you are learning about anti-racist work and invested in anti-racist work and taking action in that way, it doesn't mean that you're not going to mess up. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to totally hurt people sometimes and say the wrong thing and then have to figure out how to try to make it better and offer a sincere apology and be okay. And this is the hardest part for me, offer a sincere apology, even if the other person chooses not to accept it and you get no closure around the whole thing.
Right.
And that's really, really hard. And that's like when I talk about being uncomfortable and having to just sit in necessary discomfort, like that's what it's been for me. And so I think that's my eyes have opened a lot in terms of constantly running things through a radar of intention versus impact and just thoughtfulness on every level. Mm-hmm. Versus thinking like I've done my work, so I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. And I think that a lot of the people that I hold near and dear in my life have gone through that same journey.
Yeah.
Or something similar, not exactly the same.
Right. So, and I think Scott's example is such a great one too, because mm-hmm. I think that's a great example of proximity to be like, yes. Well, but you know, I have a black girlfriend, so I'm good. Like right. I know these things.
Yeah. Well,
and in all honesty, like I think for a long time I wore that like, yeah, look, yeah. I'm doing my work here, y'all.
Right.
Right.
And then as I listened more, I realized that the work, I actually learned it from a guest who said something, understanding who you are is the most important thing you can offer to anybody.
Yeah.
And I had to look at, you know, what I'm given as a white person in America, even if I'm not participating in it, I'm still given
or
more
benefiting
rights.
From it. Yeah. Yeah,
totally.
I'm mm-hmm. given yeah. a luxury of to be more careless and thoughtless than other people. And sitting at the tables here, I see evidence of that, like generations of it in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I totally resonate with all of that.
So I want to get to your post now. I'm just going to read. Well, So it starts off, dear white friends, I'm a racist. And I was pretty sure where you were going with it when I read that, but it did stop me in my tracks for a moment. And then I kept reading. And I like to read it and then kind of have you go over it. Is
sure.
that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So dear white friends, I'm a racist, period. So are you, period. This is not my opinion, period. This is a fact, period. And then, so I can see why people would get angry.
Oh, yeah.
just
knew.
Reading
like
that.
When I yeah. hit post, I was like, here we go.
Here we go. And then you say multiple times this week, I've been asked to share anti-racism resources, not because I'm an anti-racism educator or expert. I am most certainly neither. But because I have talked about race on my podcast and I have openly shared my experiences learning about my own racism. And then you say, I'm going to share the requested resources here, but I have a few requests of you, my white friends, first. And then do you have that post?
I have part of it in front of me.
Okay. Can you go over those 9 points for us? Did
sure.
you mind
sure.
reading them and kind of just explaining?
Yeah. So number one, this is the requests of my white friends. So yes. Number one, get past your ego and own that you are racist. Again, this is a fact. If you have white skin, you've benefited from your skin tone your entire life. This is a neutral fact. Black and brown people have suffered tremendously because of the system that allows you to benefit. Again, neutral fact. Mm. Do you want me to stop?
You can just keep going.
Number two. Learning about your racism will be uncomfortable. Don't be precious or fragile. Mm. Walk into the discomfort. You're going to be here for a while, likely the rest of your life, because that is what is required to undo a lifetime of conditioning around your privilege. It's okay to be uncomfortable. Get comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Number three, pay Black educators.
Yes.
Learn from people of color who make it living educating others on race. Do not ask your Black friends, neighbors, or coworkers to educate you for free. They are exhausted and owe you no education or explanations. Pay Black educators who so generously put in the emotional and mental labor to share their stories, their history, and their brilliance. Mm. Number four, don't expect people of color to hold your hand and sing you lullabies as they educate you. They will likely make you uncomfortable, perhaps even mad. Sit with that. It's not their job to teach in a way that coddles you. They have endured a lifetime of discomfort. It is appropriate and necessary for you to feel uncomfortable as you learn from them. Mm. Number five, when you see racism in action, name it, call it out, and take a stand against it. Yes, this will be uncomfortable. Number six, I have to say, is a big one for me. Yeah. Because it resonates on a couple different levels. But so it says, when you find yourself in spaces of only white people, ask why that is. And if you lead spaces of only white people, ask why that is. Yes, this will be uncomfortable. And I think that for me is just, it's really prevalent in the work that I do in the life coachy space.
Yeah.
It's a lot of white women leading a lot of white communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is the piece that kind of put me on the map, as it were, was my experience at Brave Magic being the only, not the only POC, because there were five other POC, but I was the only Black person in a 600 person event that was basically, you know, by, for, and filled with white women.
Right.
Go
ahead.
No, I was saying, I don't know if I hadn't been there. The reason I wrote that article is, if I hadn't been there, would anybody have questioned it?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting. And you asked earlier, like, how did anti-racist work kind of get on my radar, and what motivated me to get started. I have always noticed racial makeups in groups.
Rare.
And I don't know. I can't like put my finger on why. And yeah. I think it maybe has to do with like my mom noticing and pointing things out. I don't know. Because my mom was definitely someone who was aware of that and aware of equity in education, because she was a teacher for 42 years. So I always notice when someone's like, oh, here's my mastermind group of 47 white women.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah. That's the group you want to be in?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And thank you for stopping at that one and acknowledging it. Because I think it's really, I appreciate that this is something that you had on your list and something that you're taking care of for yourself. And then seven.
Number seven, teach your children about race, racism, and skin tone. This is not a wait until they're old enough kind of conversation. They are old enough now.
Snap, snap. Yes.
My son is seven and we've been talking about it.
Yeah.
He even said the other day, this probably will sound awful, but we got some more books in the mail and he's like, did you get me more Black Lives Matter books? Like, rolling his eyes.
You're like, yes, honey.
I was like, actually, yes, I did. Oh, which one would you like to read tonight?
That's great.
He's like, this is not Harry Potter. I'm like, nope, it's not.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. He does enjoy reading them, though, just so you know.
I can totally see that, though.
That's a typical seven-year-old.
It's a typical seven. When my kids were younger, I did the same thing with them, obviously, you know, for different reasons, but or maybe the same reasons. And they were also eye rolling. Like, can I just read? What was that? I can't remember what it's called. But it was such a good series of books for boys. Anyway,
they sometimes still are kind of like, are we still talking about this? Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I get the same response because I also get him a lot of books talking about feelings. And he's like, oh, we have to do feelings books tonight.
Yes. Oh, Percy Jackson. That's who it was. They love Percy Jackson.
We just got Percy Jackson. We haven't started reading it yet.
Yeah, they're really good. Okay. And then number nine. Number eight. Yeah.
So number eight, know that you're going to say and do offensive things while you're learning about your racism. Own your mistakes and missteps. Again, don't be fragile or precious. Keep learning so that you can keep doing better.
I just love that middle sentence. Again, don't be fragile or precious. It is something that I didn't have a name for so many years when I would bring up the subject of race. And it just makes so much sense. It resonates so well with me. And I feel like it's a little bit overused now, but I mean, I feel like maybe people are being desensitized to those words, but they are really meaningful to Black people. So I appreciate you putting them in there.
Oh, good.
And number nine.
Number nine, be a resourceful, responsible, more anti-racist citizen by learning from these educators, who I then go on to list. Mm-hmm. Pay them, buy their books, sign up for their talks and courses and events, and give money to the causes that they share.
Yes. Yeah, I did want you to talk more about it, but we're just about out of time. So I'm just going to ask you a couple more questions. And what I will do is put a link to this post in our show notes, so that people can see it for themselves. And it'll also, you'll have it on your social media, where we're going to encourage people to look you up and do what you're doing.
Perfect.
Is there anything else that you haven't said that you want to say to white women right now?
I want to say to stay committed and invested. You know, when COVID hit, I for a long time used this analogy of a marathon. Like, we're at the beginning of a marathon and pace yourselves. And then on top of that, then we after Memorial Day, when this whole cultural revolution started, I was like, well, now it's not a marathon, now it's an ultra. And if you know anything about running, like, an ultra is like 30 or more miles, and it is one foot in front of the other. You never go fast. Like, you stop and eat snacks.
Yeah.
Sometimes you lay down for a minute and then you get up and you keep moving. And so I think that having this commitment, this long-term commitment, is really, really important. And I think especially for leaders, I think that there needs to be an outward-facing commitment and an inward-facing commitment. And I think both are really important, because if we see women, and I've seen this happen in the social media space, if we see white women go back to just their regular feeds after a week or so, then there's an assumption for other white women that it's okay to do that it's okay to just do a little bit and then move on. And so, like, sure, go back to your regular content and continue to integrate content around this revolution and around what you're doing and around amplifying other voices. And so that's the outward facing piece that gives everyone else permission. Because when you're in a leadership space, and when I talk about leadership, I mean, if you're the head of a household, if you are leading in a community, in an organization, in the workplace, in a school environment, as a soccer coach, like, however you lead, we're all leaders. When people see you lead in that way, then they know that you give them permission to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And you remind them to do the same thing. And we all start letting each other off the hook real quickly when we're like, oh, Black Lives Matter was only a few days in, like, you know, at the end of May in 2020.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the biggest piece, is like really staying outwardly and inwardly invested. And then the inward work is like continuing to read the books and invest in the resources and take the classes and listen to the podcasts. And like, I'm getting ready to start a mastermind program. Well, I've just finished a mastermind program with a Black leader the last 2 years, and I'm getting ready to start another one probably in the next month or so. And so, like, really investing in learning from people who are different than you, because it really changes your worldview for the better.
And I just want to add to that and underscore your point of calling out spaces that are all white and questioning those. I just think that's so important that people continue to do that work, because Black people can't do it.
Can I share an example of that?
Yeah. Okay.
So one of the things that I have been aware of for the last couple of years, my son goes to a Catholic school. Like, I'm like the rebel Catholic. Uh-huh. We had him like secretly baptized again. I'm like, we're not telling anyone we're baptizing him, because I do not agree with so much of the Catholic Church, but I wanted him to go to the school. And the school has actually, for the Seattle area, has a pretty diverse student population, but not a diverse teacher population. Mm. And it's something that I noticed right away. And all of kindergarten, I was like, I feel like I should say something, but like, we're new to the school. I don't want to be, you know, the squeaky wheel. And so in the middle of COVID, when the administration could not have been more overwhelmed, I thought that would be a good time to go ahead and say something. Like, but to your point, to like speak up. So I did. I sent an email. I said, hey, I know you have a lot going on. And also, as you're looking at hiring for 2020, 2021, I'm curious what your, with inclusivity being a core value of the school mission statement,
right?
What are you doing to hire for diversity and to make that a core tenant? Because I'm not seeing that happening in the couple of years that we've been here.
Yes.
And so, and I got a response back that was, the principal replied right away. And I felt like the response was okay, but mm-hmm. could have been better. So then I replied with like, and how about these ideas too? And like, how can I help? And
yes.
So I think that like those kinds of emails and conversations are hard and uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
and also super necessary. And I think that's how you start looking at calling out white spaces to be like, hey, why is this? Like, why is this that you are space for Black and brown children,
mm-hmm.
but they're only being led by white, middle-class white women?
Right. Right.
Like that's not okay. That's not actually creating a safe place for them.
No.
So that's just one example that I think could be relevant to many.
Oh, very.
People listening.
Thank you for that. I mean, for this whole conversation, for all of it, tell me where people can find you.
Yes. So you can check out my podcast, The Shameless Mom Academy.
Please check out her podcast. Yes. It's so good and so diverse.
It's a lot of fun.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And relevant.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Let me just talk about it. You don't talk about it. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So we're on any podcast, any place you listen to podcasts, we're there for the Shameless Mom Academy. And then I have a private Facebook group for moms. It's shamelessmom.com/Facebook. And you can get into the private Facebook group. And then you can connect with me if you just go to shamelessmom.com. And that's my website. And there's a contact page if you want to reach out and continue any sort of conversation or anything. I'd be happy to connect.
And you're on Instagram as
Shameless Mom.
At Shameless Mom
Academy. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Don't forget about that.
I know.
I love your posts. And I love the pink. So
lots of pink.
And then just really quickly, what's next for you?
Oh, gosh. I wish I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, 2020. Does anyone know what's next in 2020?
Right. No.
It has just been this year has thrown me for loop after loop after loop to the point that I'm like, I feel like I was just saying yesterday, I feel like I can't, I used to try to batch my podcast episodes and like, I'm going to do record four this week and then not record anything for a month.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do that right now because the world is it, like what I record now might be irrelevant or irresponsible in 4 weeks.
Exactly.
So what's next is continuing to listen and learn and lead in ways that support, you know, I've always been about helping moms rebuild their identity after motherhood and learn how to take more courageous action. But now I'm looking more and more at how to incorporate that into like be a courageous leader. And what does that mean beyond stepping outside of marriage and motherhood? Because for a long time, it was just about like finding yourself after marriage and motherhood. And now it's like, how can you do this and also be a better citizen and a better ancestor? And so incorporating some of that into my work. And so that's kind of coming down the pipeline as I build out programs and content for the rest of this year and definitely into next year as well.
Beautiful. Sarah Dean, you did not disappoint. I just love you. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much, Laura, for giving us
your time. And
and
thank you for everything that you're doing out in the world. Truly, from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate you.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate you so much too. And you too, Scott.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks for being that voice. We need it.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Oh my gosh, I love you guys and I'm so grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Be sure not to miss our weekly full episodes and Scott Talks each Tuesday by subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to ask a question of any of our upcoming guests for this series. All of us at The Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness during this challenging time, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season 2 even more memorable together.